Welcome to our Brave New You Tribe podcast. Today, we'd like to welcome Dr. Anne Campbell, who is an author, television producer, and now with her husband John, coaches couples in their sexual relationships.
The wonderful Dr. Anne Campbell, otherwise known as Annie. We've known each other a very, very long time, but we started working together in the year 2000, and she gave me my first break into television and trained me in documentaries. So please welcome Dr. Anne Campbell. She got her PhD in human genetics at Oxford University before deciding to leave academia for television, where she made groundbreaking and award-winning documentaries such as Death, The Plague, A Decade of AIDS, Anatomy of Love, and many, many more very powerful pieces of work. And quite often related to the series, she would publish a book that sort of allowed her to go into even more depth with the science behind the work. So her published books include Brain Sex, which is the difference between men and women's brains, A Mind to Crime, what actually makes somebody be motivated or predisposed to criminal acts, Why Men Don't Iron. Was that the last book? And once again, she's pushing the envelope. So when we did the death series, talking about death and talking about cancer, talking about terminal illness was really a taboo subject. And so when you suddenly were in the place where you didn't, you were having to deal with this, you didn't know where to go, you didn't know who to ask. So the series was about helping people with that. And now Annie is working with her husband, John, on the other taboo subject, which is sex. And so she and John coach couples on how to make the most of their sexual connection in relationships. So it's really fascinating stuff. Looking forward to hearing about it. So welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Lou.
You've always been very passionate about digging deep into subjects that are quite tricky. Doing all of this groundbreaking work in television and books. So it's been death, crime, brain sex difference, and now sex. Can you walk us through how this passion for these difficult subjects came about?
I think it came from a passionate desire to improve people's lives, to connect, to change things. As a young person, I was very political, very involved in politics, and I'd got into the academic thing. I was in a research lab, and I'd got my PhD, and I was going to be, you know, this academic. And I suddenly sat down and I thought to myself, does this make me happy? Is it making my heart sing? And I thought, no, it's not. I'd much rather go out and help change the world in a little way, you know. And I thought, what's the best way of doing that? Television. Television was new, and it was exciting. I mean, you know, we were still on film, you know, none of this digital easy stuff. And I thought, wow, this is what I want to do. And I announced to my father, I'm quitting. I'm not going to do this postgraduate thing in Stanford. I'm quitting. I'm going to work in television. And he thought I had completely flipped. And he said to me, you don't know anyone in television. And I said, well, no, I don't, but I will do it. And my goodness me, I think that's for me the secret. When you say, I'm no longer going to please people, I'm going to please me, I'm going to follow my heart, things just roll so easily. I knock on a door, I get taken on for a week in this local television place. They have something called Nationwide, and the Nationwide regional researcher is pregnant, and suddenly she has to go early. I get her job, they love me, the BBC love me, they move me to London, they put me on training courses, I train how to make films, and I'm doing my dream job in, you know, I'm on Panorama, and my job is completely involved, and that was so much a passion. And it evolved. I think that's the secret, is to remember, you might have a passion, a real passion at one moment, but it evolves through your life, and your passions actually change. But the secret is to keep that joy. I mean, we do everything, really. Our motivation is to feel good inside and be aware of how you feel. And for me, I seem to have a natural, I didn't know what it was, what I was doing, but I seem to have a natural understanding that I had to feel really good about what I was doing. So every, the one thing I'm really proud of in my entire career is I've never ever made a program I didn't really desire to make with a passion. So I made my first real story was Brain Death. I did a lot about death. I've changed now. It's all sex and love now. Better focus, much better focus. But I think, I believe for me, it's always to follow that instinctive knowledge that this is good, that it, you're serving you, but you're serving others at the same time. So you're giving and receiving at the same time.
I want to ask you about that, because the sort of natural partner to passion is purpose. And, you know, behind every successful person, we tend to find that they're pretty aware of what their purpose is. So what has that been for you? So, for instance, in death, your purpose was to help people find their way through the process. And you've come to this place where you want to help people in their sex lives.
I think in the very broad sense of purpose, for me, it is to bring joy, to share joy. I mean, you can't share what you haven't got. So for me now, I think my purpose has changed from a young person who, you know, was very political, thought she could change the world, blah, blah, blah. And I know now my influence is different. And I know now my purpose truly is to shine a light, actually, to say to people, it's here, it's in all of you. You all have joy within you. You all have it there for you. You've just got all these blocks and grievances and complaints and this and that. And so my purpose now, especially with this way of making love, is because it's so connecting. It shares such joy and such fun. You know, have fun. As a young person, I took life a little too seriously. I most definitely did. And I know now, don't forget to laugh. Laugh. You know, that's what it's really about. And people have got so serious and so focused on career and goals and this. No. Make sure, look inside. Am I enjoying it? Is this giving me fun? Is this giving me real satisfaction with inside of me? And if it is, then you're sharing it with everybody else. And you realize that you're a mirror. You know, everybody is a mirror. And so my purpose now is to share joy. And the purpose of life is joy, really. But we've forgotten it.
Can you talk to me about how you met John and how that kind of triggered you to
thing that ever happened to me.
A new way of making love and how the connection between you has led you to starting your work with, that you've called now, Let's Talk About Sex.
Yeah. I was widowed, and at the time it seemed like my life had come to an end. You know, he was my best friend, we worked together, I was with him for 27 years, and it was the darkest moment of my life. But when he had said to me very carefully, you must not spend your life alone. So once I came out of that, I embarked on a search. And I cannot tell you what I did. I did a decade or more of online dating, speed dating, having dates arranged for me, putting ads in magazines. I did everything. This is a perfect example, really. I had also, through the death of my husband, I come across something called A Course in Miracles, which is it's a self-study book for inner peace, to teach you inner peace. And I was very, I'd learned through the experience of practicing all the principles that my life was getting better and better. I was coming out of that deep pit. I knew what I wanted in my partner. I wanted someone who was on the same path. And actually I thought, can I find a man who would put up with my morning practices, you know, meditating, reading the course lesson, doing some quiet meditation, guided, you know, a good couple of hours worth of stuff in the morning before I start my day to ground me. I thought, what man's going to cope with this? You know, and after all this endless dating, I was at a picnic with my Course in Miracles friends, and I put my wedding ring back on. saying, I'm going to celebrate the wonderful relationship that I had, and I'm going to stop looking. I'm just going to let go. And I'd left one website up that I was a member of called Spiritual Singles. And 2 days later, into my inbox on this site pops John's profile. He's written me a little tiny note, and I look at his profile and thinking, that's it, I'm not going to talk to him. And then I look and it says, Course in Miracles. This man is a Course in Miracles student. It's very radical stuff, Course in Miracles. And I thought, wow, even if there was no sexual chemistry, we were bound to be friends. So I just sent him my phone number. And we have this conversation quickly on the phone. And I know something hasn't quite gelled. I'm not sure why. But I'm a persistent soul, so we discover that we're booked into the same Course in Miracles CAF talk and that we're friends with the speaker. So we would have met a week later anyway, even if we hadn't met on site. And then we also have discovered that we go to the same study group. So John knew everybody I knew. We already had a whole set of mutual friends. Talk about being, oh, you should be together, you should be together. And we meet in this CAF before going to the talk. And as I'm sitting down, I kind of like the look of him. He's quite a handsome fella. Oh, he looks all right. But the most extraordinary thing happens. My hand brushes his hand, and we both of us go, whoa! There's literally an electric current runs between us, and we just go, what was that? And I mean, it was like we had known each other forever. And we walked out of that CAF holding hands and up to the meeting, and everybody thought we were an item. And that evening, I lived close at that time. I lived in Shepherd's Bush, close to where this... And John comes back for a cup of coffee, all very, you know. And the reason that John had been... I'd picked up this slight whatever, and he explained afterwards. I have a BBC-trained voice, right? It's kind of posh. I mean, John said, it sounds like the Queen. And now the Queen would never have sex, you know. So this lady is not going to be interested in sex. And so he comes home with me, and we have a BAFTA that the team won for the Death series. So he wanted to see the BAFTA, and it's in my study. And I have a massive number of books on this shelf, and every single one of them is about sex in one form or another. And John looks at this and thinks, oh, maybe I made a mistake here. And so our journey was completely, we knew that was it, that we were meant to, and so we have been together ever since. But the really interesting moment was when we got to the point of going to bed together and having a lovemaking session. And I love sex, right? I've had really good sex in my lifetime, of what I call the conventional sex, you know, where we're trying to please the other partner. It's sort of goal-driven. You have to have an erection. You have to have orgasms. It's all sort of a bit stressful, actually. And so we get into bed, and John says, I make love in a different way. And I say, yes. And he says to me, you don't have to do anything. He says to me, you've got to focus on your own pleasure. Forget about me. I don't have to have an erection. I don't have to have an orgasm, whatever. And it's slow. We're going to take a lot of time. And oh my goodness me, was it an eye-opener for me. Even the first time, I think, wow, this is way better than the usual way. And after that, we started to read and we started to develop, and we went on a training course in Switzerland called the Making Love for Couples, run by a beautiful couple, Diana and Michael Richardson. And we spent 10 days with them. And it was life transforming because we learned a lot more about all of this way of making love. I mean, the morning session was explaining the theory. And in the afternoon, they said, you've got to go to bed for 3 hours and make love. And even at the time, John said, how am I going to do that? But it was amazing, and it grows. It's not a way of making love that you... I mean, I must admit, I clicked in very quickly into it. And I think the reason for that was I had understood in conventional lovemaking, there's always a drop. However much you like someone, including my own husband, after 2 or 3 years of being with someone, the desire drops. And the sex life, and you know, you take any of the studies and statistics and you look at long-term relationships, 2, 3, 4 years on, the sex goes like that. And I now understand why. As a neuroscientist, I started to think about the way of making love that John and I do is very sensual, and it's very about the fact that the breasts are the way to awaken a woman's body, not the clitoris. And that there is an orgasmic feeling that's beyond climax. There's a very big difference between orgasm and climax. And that the orgasmic thing is the most amazing thing. I mean, John can have multiple orgasms. I don't know if men understand. They can have multiple orgasms without even having an erection, you know. It's extraordinary. But I realized on reading, I started to read everything I could lay my hands on about the science behind lovemaking and sex and what's happening. And I realized that there is a very big difference in what you're triggering in your neurochemistry in the two ways of making love. So one way, what I called fast friction sex, you're triggering, it's goal-oriented, it's stressful, you're triggering the flight and fight neurochemistry. And not that chemistry is not only fight and flight, it's the addiction chemistry. So it means in order to get the same pleasure, it has to get more and more and more and more exciting. And eventually you have the dip because there's a limit. You know, it's like anything, it's actually how we learn. You know, we get motivated to learn by this sort of rush of feel good, but also it's the addiction mechanism. So it's quite understandable that conventional sex separates in the end. It causes separation. Whereas this way of making love, because it's slow and sensual and there is no excitement to it, it is calm sex. Right? It sounds counterintuitive, doesn't it? But it isn't once you practice it. But that's triggering tend and befriend circuits. So it's triggering all the bonding, the oxytocin, and it creates a really, really deep bond that serves you not just in your own personal lives, but in the workplace, everywhere. If you are satisfied, completely satisfied and at ease in your relationship, you're going to do everything else better. So we actually go around saying, now sex is everything, actually. You know, it's very important. And so we decided we wanted to share this because on the whole, a lot of teachings are very tantric with lots of rules and all this sort of stuff. And we thought, no, we want to help people to learn this different way of lovemaking and to incorporate it into their own style, but also to help them too with the tools of good relationship, which is taking responsibility for your own feelings, which is key to a good relationship.
So yeah. When people come to you, probably one or other has decided there's an issue and has managed to persuade the other one to come. But then even that to that point must be quite tricky. Usually get so bad that they're kind of forced to come to you, to come
to change. Yes. You know, I mean, I'm 72 now. And you look back at what you thought were the worst moments of your life and you realise they were the pivotal change moments that were really good for you in the end. Now it seems extraordinary to say the loss of a partner can actually be the gain of a new way of thinking. We have a mix of people come to us, so we've had young couples and older couples, and on the whole, they tend to have, it is nearly always the same thing, that they have a good relationship, they love their partner, but the sex has got really boring. And when sex gets boring, people want to go and search for something else. So it tends to lead to, you know, having infidelities and things that upset the whole apple cart. So we have an elder couple now that have just come to us. And the sex is, he's, you know, as you get a wee bit older, he's had a prostate thing, he's had problems, can't get an erection. So she thinks sex is over. So we're going to, well, we're meeting up with them. We're going to teach them that sex isn't over, and that you start step by step. You can't just go in there and you begin to get them to connect again. I mean, with touch and feel and beginning to arouse a more sensual feel, and to explain that sex isn't what they think it is. We have so many misconceptions. I mean, we're programmed to think of sex in a certain way. So we basically are reprogramming them to think about sex in a different way. But it takes time, because the conventional way of making love makes your penis and vagina insensitive. And it takes time to build up this orgasmic, amazing feeling that we have been... I mean, we make love every day, every morning, before we go out. We will, if we don't have much time, we have a pop-in, which means even if John doesn't have an erection, I pop him inside, and they've got to know each other. The vagina and the penis actually talk to each other. When you take away fear and stress and you relax into sex, so we're teaching people to relax into it, gradually, you'll learn your own way. We tell people that, you know, this business of the breasts and the massage of the breasts. And you know, you don't have to have a partner either. It's learning to love your own body, to really love your own body. And there's very physical experiencing ways if you nurture your body. I do something every single morning that has... All these things we do, by the way, we always practice what we preach. We walk our talk. But I do something every morning that when I like to put creams on, right? But I say, thank you, hands, you're so beautiful. Thank you, breasts, I love you. And thank you, legs, and I do my whole body. It takes maybe 2 minutes, but if you do put creams on in the morning, you start to really love your body. And of course, it's the mirror thing. You also look in the mirror and say, I love you. And I mean, that's hard for lots of people, but they're so simple, these tools. So we teach couples that sort of thing. Now, the reason that people have so much infertility is stress. And of course, this way, I mean, we have no rules. I mean, a lot of the tantric things, you say you're not meant to ejaculate, you're not meant to do this, we have no rules. The only thing is we say slow down, connect, and communicate. And that's the other big, big thing that we do with couples. We get them to talk about. Our first exercise is to have them sit down, and I have a whole list of all the different names for the penis and the vagina. And I do a funny thing, you know, it's the spitting bishop and the velvet-headed butler and, you know, all these names and the sing-song and the... I like the tantric term, you know, the yoni and the lingam, and the lingam is the wand of light and the yoni is the womb of creation, you know. But you really get to people to talk about their sex and what shamed them as a child. We all have things. Like I had when I was developing, I was at 10 or 11, I was in a boarding school and I got quite big breasts for a wee person. And no one of my cat, nobody else had breasts, I was the only one. And I was so embarrassed. And I think we all of us have little things like that that inhibit us. But if you start just to talk, it's like in Germany, they're much freer in their nakedness. Now, we believe you must sleep naked, absolutely must. You know, nakedness is key to this. It may be colder, you just get a good duvet, sleep naked. Because that, just being naked liberates in lots of ways. But talking, communicating, and asking for what you want, saying what pleases, we don't tend to do that, you know. We seem to think that our partners ought to know, they ought to know, you know, what to do and what pleases me. We're all different. What pleases you is going to be different because of your different programming. I mean, we pattern match to our past in terms of how we respond. And we all have blocks, we all have grievances, we all have embarrassments. And I think the more you're open with we teach people to be really open and talk about everything. And when we were doing this wonderful making love thing in Switzerland, in the evening, lunchtime, you had to stay with your partner and work on what you were doing. In the evening, we all had to get together and to talk. With one rule, we were only allowed to talk about sex. and what had been going on for us. So did you have an orgasm? Did this work? Did you try this? And how did the breast massage work? Oh, now have you tried this? And I mean, wow, it was liberating just to be so free. And so it's simple as that. That's why we've called the website We Talk About Sex. And we literally, that, you know, we would run a meetup. That's all we do, is just people talk about, like my embarrassing, okay, what was your worst embarrassing moment in your, you know, when you were a little girl or a little boy? Because that's where the programs get instilled. And I mean, John has a lovely story that he tells, which I shall steal now. There's, you know, for example, you've got little Johnny and Mary, they're having a bath together, you know, mum and dad are there, and little Johnny starts to, you know, because children take pleasure in their genitals. It's nonsense. They don't have sexual senses. They do. So he's just fiddling around, and Mary says, oh, don't do that, little Johnny. That's naughty, naughty. Don't do that. Whoa, big program goes into him. There's something wrong down there. But a program goes into Mary as well, doesn't it? Ooh, he's got something I have to be careful of. And we gather all these programs through our, especially in the early days, quite unconscious programs about sex, our bodies. And they're all things, if we release them, just by talking and being open, you know, it releases them. So We Talk About Sex, that's our key, is let's talk about it, guys. Let's be free, let's be open. And it's liberating.
One of the themes that I always talk about is peaks. I particularly enjoyed the peak story of your porn movie.
Oh.
Would you like to tell people about how that came about?
Wow, that was a liberating experience, I tell you, for us. We thought the best way to demonstrate our way of making love is to film it and make it an educational, this is how you do it film. And so we went in search of a filmmaker that had experience with filming sex. And in the process, we came across a lovely lady. This is her real name, by the way, Erica Lust. And she has a porn site, but she calls it erotica, because she wants to change conventional porn from what she calls mucky smut, to make it into beautiful. So we go to her and we say to her, look, would you do an educational film for us? And she says, and we keep the copyright, we use it for our teaching. And she says, no, sorry, we don't do that. We only make films about people. And she said, oh, but you know, we really like what you're doing. We've never ever made a porn movie about 70-year-olds having sex. And we thought, wow, should we? I mean, in the end, it's about sharing. So we thought, oh, okay, why not? And so we talked to her. She's in Barcelona. She's Spanish. And we meet Pablo and her, you know, we do a Skype, and we really like them. They're such lovely people. And we think, well, we can trust them. What, you know? And so I ask, you know, I say to her, how's it done? And she says, oh, documentary style, you know, this. And I think documentary style to us, to me and Lewis, little baby camera, one person, you know, very private, very secluded, you know, blah, blah. And we think, okay, that's fine, we'll manage that. And we arrive in Barcelona to do this film. And they put us up in this very beautiful hotel. And we're waiting in the lobby for them to come and pick us up. And this young woman walks in, very upright, very, you know. The reason we don't put our tits out is because, of course, we've been shamed about them. So I have this saying, you know, shoulders back, tits out. Well, she was definitely shoulders back, tits out. And across her T-shirt was, make me come. We thought, oops, wow. And we get slightly nervous at this point. And we get taken to the studio. And then we think, oh, my God. It's a film set studio. There are at least 20 people. There's makeup, there's wardrobe. There's sound booms, there's this massive studio, and there's this one bed in the middle of this enormous space with bright lights and booms and this. And we think, oh, my God. And we go down to the changing room, to the cloakroom. They've given us things to wear. And we think, should we do a runner? Shall we do a runner? And we think, no, we've committed. We're going to do this. And so they do... the idea is that we do the lovemaking first, and then they do an interview with us, and they film sequences and things after. And so we nervous, get our clothes off, and there's all these people around us, men, you know, and they, oh my God. I've never seen John's penis shrink so much. It goes to the size of a cherry. Oh dear. Oh. Now, I'm used to cameras, so I think, okay. The whole point of this demonstration is it doesn't matter what the penises are like, you can still be orgasmic and have pleasure. So we keep going. And he's having multiple orgasms in this film by the end. And we just keep going. We just do. We try and shut our... That was nice, though. I tell you, they were wonderful. We always do a prayer. Before we make love, we always meditate together. I mean, this may be not what everybody else was doing, but we always do a meditation and we do a prayer. And they actually got us to do this, and it's in the film. It's very beautiful. And unfortunately, we never explained to them, did we, that what had happened. But I don't think they actually knew. And it's a brilliant demonstration for men that sex isn't about erection and climax. It's about having multiple orgasms. That, you know, John's body ripples with orgasms. You know, it's really amazing to watch. And me too. I'm much quieter. I'm very quiet. But me, it sends me. The only way I can describe it, you can't really put it in words. I am in some divine space that is beyond any climax I've ever experienced. Now, it's not that we don't. Sometimes we will have an ejaculation or a climax or whatever. We have no rules. We go with the flow of it. But this it was... By the time we'd finished that film, we felt lighter, didn't we? But then we also thought, okay, we thought, right, this is just going to be tucked away on her website. We did not anticipate that actually she was going to go to town to publicise it. And this is about 6 months on. We'd actually forgotten about it. They'd sent us various cuts as we'd gone. They'd made a very beautiful little 10-minute intro into it about us, which was really lovely. And then the rest of it is us. And it is, even now I look at it like, wow, did we really do that? But we hadn't told any family members that we were doing it because we didn't think it was important. We thought they'd never know. We'd never know. And then they launch it, they launch it. And suddenly I get this Snapchat thing from my nephew who is in Thailand. And it's us on bed together naked. And he says, did you know you're all over Snapchat? And I said, oh my God. And we're everywhere. There's articles in The Sun and it says, "Pawns, seniors make porn." The Metro, The Sun, everywhere. And of course, John has six kids, which he has fantastic relationships with. But you know, I have a brother and wonderful nephews and nieces who, but my brother is a doctor, he's very in the medical model. Oh my God, you know, what's he gonna say about his sister doing a porn movie? And John's kids, they are not happy. They are not happy at all. We get all these emails and they have a meeting, all of them. They sit down and they watch the film together. And we think, oh my God, how are we going to deal with this? Worry. Oh dear me. But actually, gradually, we talk to them. It becomes open. We explain our motivation, that we want to share this amazing connecting thing. And actually, they see that the film is very beautiful. It's beautifully made. It really is. It's fantastic. And and so gradually, we now have a much more open relationship with all of them about sex, which is amazing. And I mean, the younger people can come and talk to me. Because I'm stepmom, it's also very easy to come to me as well. But it's lovely to be able to talk to dad in an open way. So that... It's been liberating on the family front. But my brother, right, my lovely brother, Oh my gosh, I'll have to just tell him, because if I don't tell him, you know, the kids will anyway. So I ring him up. I say, George, I'm going to send you some bits and pieces I want you to look at. We've made a film, and it's causing quite a stir, and I don't want you to be told about it by someone else. And so that's it. And he goes and looks at everything, and he writes me this beautiful email saying, Annie, this is fantastic. Well done. You're stars. What a wonderful thing to share. And I'm so proud of you. But I think what it's brought to all of us is, again, we talk about sex. We all talk about it now much more openly. And I think it's the most... Making that film for us was a liberating process, wasn't it, darling? Really was, you know. It's such fun, too. And I mean, now it's out there for everybody. Oh, we've had some lovely emails from people, too, who are watching it. We got an email from a couple who are in there. How old were they, darling? 90s? 80s and 90s. And they said, thank you for your film. It's so wonderful to hear that everybody else is having fun as well as us. Because, you know, there's no reason. You can make love forever making love this way. You know, sex is for everyone at any age. But I also know that for younger people, it means their sex life is staying good. They're not experiencing that dip. You know how the pressures of, you know, having a young family is very stressful, can be, but making love this way is very calming. It's very bonding and connecting, and it creates a trust within a relationship that isn't there in that conventional way of making love. And so that's what we want to share. This is our purpose now, is to share our joy with everybody else and to teach as many people as we can how to make love this way.
So, looking to the future, moving forward, at school, sex education is about not getting pregnant and not getting disease. This would be
Wow,
a
would
really
be
great way for young people to start talking about sex and thinking about sex in a way that launches them into a life of lovemaking that is actually open and connecting. And
all we can do is to share and be open. And I mean, we haven't thought as far as, you know, what do you do about schools and sex education? And I guess we go into schools as well. But you have to do it, I think, through online in order to reach a lot of people. So I think down the line we will do much more of that. Because as you say, sex education tends to... Well, it's getting better, much better. You know, they don't talk about... You know, most kids are learning about sex through porn. And it's creating a very uncomfortable misconception about sex and what it is. So, yes, I mean, it is teaching the openness, teaching that it's relationship, sharing. I think it's just sharing it. And I think the more we share with other people, it's the ripple effect, isn't it? They'll go out and, you know, perhaps we teach a young couple and they go into schools, you know. What you share goes on and grows, doesn't it? So I guess... Our purpose is to share as much as we can in the next decade, however long we're given, how long we're blessed with, just keep sharing this and making it our focus, and then it ripples out and other people will take up the baton and share. I think that's the way forward, is to keep teaching it to lots of people, giving everything, say, take it away, go and teach this, learn, teach, experience your own way, take it into schools, take it into old people's homes. You know, it's both ends of the spectrum. You know, it would bring a zest in life to any couple at whatever age.
Saving on the NHS, wouldn't it?
Yes. Oh, my goodness me, because so many of our health problems are related to stress. And we ground our day through it. And I bounce out every day, you know. Life is fun. And... You know, of course, every day we meet challenges and stresses, but if internally you're grounded already, they just float off you. Things work better, don't they? It's experience. You don't teach through words either. You have to empower people to experience these things themselves. It's empowering people with experience. Words don't teach, only experience teaches. And suppose that's why we like to share by demonstrating and doing that. I mean, we will demonstrate and physically show people this way of lovemaking. I mean, it's not books and formula, it's really the nitty-gritty. We're very open. We've just done a sexual surrogacy training in Ireland, which is where you go in and you help people that have been unable to make love for whatever reason. They're paralyzed by fear, or they're paralyzed, you know, that sort of thing. And again, it's opening up, because this way of making love, it's easy. You know, you can do it whatever your shape, form, size, disability, whatever. And it's just the sharing of all these things. I think that's our job, is just to share and to allow, you know. Things tend to roll by their own purpose. You know, if you're listening, you follow rather than push. And I think that's very much our philosophy. So we don't have big goals and plans in that sense. You have a vision of saying, I would like schools to teach this. I would like to see every couple being taught a different way, or giving access to learning, or trying it. I mean, the whole point about sex is you can experiment. It's an adventure. I think people forget that, you know, it's exploration, it's adventure, it's fun, you know. And I guess that's our purpose.
When I was working with you, it was 20-odd years ago. And
was it that long ago?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
And
feels like yesterday.
And you are radiating. Yeah. And you look so happy, and your eyes are shining, and you look amazing. And I always ask our guests what message they would give to their younger self. So from where you are now, what would you say to your...
To my younger self, I would say, I think my younger self was very closed down and very... I thought I did know how things ought to be. You know, there was a perfect way of doing something, and really no other way was right. And it's taken me a while to let go of wanting to be perfect. So I'd say to my younger self, you don't have to be perfect. Just do it. That's enough.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Anne.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
But fascinating conversation, amazing.
It's good.
Experience that you've shared.
Thank you for, you know, this is really fun. That's to you too.
Thanks, Annie, for your inspiring words and encouraging us to look at intimate connections and sexual relationships in a more meaningful way. Thanks also to Create Lab Films, Electra TV Hire, Zone, Emmy Hotel, and everyone who came to the event. Goodbye for now, and see you next time.